Fasten your seatbelt and get ready for the red eye.
Each week, we'll be immersing you in a world of adventure. From thrilling dramas to side-splitting humor and life-altering moments. Welcome aboard the Red Eye. Turbulence. It's rare that a long-haul flight should land at its destination without having a bump or two along the way. If you travel often, then you've probably experienced what we call moderate turbulence, when it's bumpy enough for liquids to splash out of a cup, for want of a better description. You may have had it so bad that the cabin crew have been ordered to sit down and strap in for a short while until the worst of it is over. But have you had it really bad? So bad that if you're not wearing your seatbelt, you've found yourself lifted up out of your seat and into the air as the plane suddenly drops hundreds or perhaps thousands of feet in the sky. This, dear listeners, is the one type of turbulence even us crew are afraid of. The one that comes out of nowhere. Clear air turbulence. You can't see it on the weather forecast, the pilots can't see it on their radar, but when you find it, well, let's just say, you will definitely know about it. So, when the safety demonstration tells you to keep your seatbelt fastened at all times while seated, if you didn't take heed before, perhaps after you've heard this little story, you just might. Hong Kong to Sydney, June 2007, 07:30 a.m. Jane, the flight manager, finished her PA and hung up the phone. Rachel stood nearby, patiently listening, trying to take everything in. With her purse, of course, imminent, she was keen to learn everything she could about her new role. "Now, where were we?" Jane asked. The seatbelt sign had come on for landing, just as she'd been giving Rachel a lesson in switching off the in-flight entertainment. "You were about to show me how to turn this off," Rachel said, nodding at the console just outside of the flight deck door. "Ah, yes," said Jane. She pressed the eject button on the first cassette player, and a tape popped out. "It's simple, really," she said, snapping it into a clear case, putting that in the drawer below and taking out the next. "Just make sure you put them in the right cases and the right order, or the next flight will be chaos," she smiled, stepping back. "Your go," she said, with a wave of her hand. Rachel stepped forward and started ejecting the tapes one by one. "I'll secure your aisle," James said, cutting across the galley behind them.
"Oh, thanks, love,"
Rachel called back. Jane started to gather together the paperwork that had been stuffed in her jumpseat at the L1 door.
"Did you see your family in Hong Kong?" she asked.
"I did indeed," said Rachel.
She'd been up to the peak with her aunt and uncle and enjoyed a dinner out with them and their friends. Hong Kong was easily her favourite city in the world.
"Any plans for..."
Jane's voice tailed off into a squeak as out of nowhere, the plane jolted hard and dropped suddenly. The jolt made the carts shake in their stowages, and a single water bottle fell off the galley side, landing on the floor with a thud. Behind it, a tray of crockery shuffled precariously close to the edge. Rachel and Jane exchanged a look, both instinctively grabbing onto the closest things to them. For Jane, it was the jump seat headrest, and for Rachel, the raised lip of the galley side. When the next drop came, a small shriek escaped from Rachel's mouth as she felt herself raise at least a foot off the floor. Rendered weightless, she gripped the galley side hard with her fingers as she took flight and watched in horror as the tray of crockery crashed down on the floor beneath her. The noise of things crashing was deafening when combined with the screams that now came from the cabin. Landing back on the floor, she looked wide-eyed at Jane, who was forcing down the jump seat.
"Sit down!"
she yelled above the noise of the cabin. Together, they pushed the double seat down and dropped next to each other. Fastening their harnesses, Jane wrenched the phone from its cradle.
"Cabin crew, take your seats!"
she ordered over the PA. Rachel's heart was pounding, and she looked down at her trembling hands. It was only then she noticed her forearm was bleeding, but she couldn't tell if it was deep or not, Any pain was so far absent as the adrenaline coursed through her body. She watched as Jane dialed the number for the back galley on the phone.
"How are things down there?"
she asked. There was a pause while she listened, her face serious.
"We'll be down as soon as we can. Just get everyone strapped in."
Rachel didn't need to ask. Whatever they had felt at the front, she knew that the back would have had it much, much worse. And she could only imagine what things looked like down there. She leaned over to see down the aisle into the business class cabin. On the floor, halfway down, an older man sat in the aisle. His body lifted off the floor, slamming back down over and over as the plane continued to buck up and down. He held on tightly to the leg of his seat as the passengers around him looked on helplessly, no one able to reach him. Corbels lit up the ceiling like fairy lights, but she couldn't go to them. Not yet. Further down the plane in economy, she could just make out one of the crew lying in the aisle. The passengers either side were leaning over her, their arms outstretched to hold her down. Rachel strained to see. To her, she looked almost lifeless, and she gripped the latch of her harness, ready to release it the second that it was safe enough. A few seconds seemed like an eternity while they waited for the plane to stabilize. Eventually, they seemed to level off, and she looked at Jane, who nodded. Rachel twisted the buckle of her harness and, with shaking legs, stood up from her seat. She opened the door nearest to her and grabbed a handful of tissues to wipe the blood off her arm quickly. It was starting to sting now.
"I'll go see how I can help," she said.
Jane nodded, the jump seat snapping back up as she stood up too. Out of the window, Rachel could see that they were still descending into Sydney. Whatever she was going to find would need to be dealt with in just a few short minutes.
"Could you please just lift that window blind, madam? Thank you." He walked slowly down the cabin, securing for landing. The plane was half empty in economy, and this had been one of those easy flights, the one where nothing went wrong. They hadn't run out of meal choices, no one had been ill, and the entertainment had worked like a dream. Now they were landing into Sydney, where he would get to see his friends. "Madam, I'm afraid we need to get baby out of the cot now," he said as he reached the bulkhead behind the three doors. The lady looked up at him, dark circles under her eyes. "He's literally just got to sleep," she groaned, leaning over to lift him out. The first drop sent the mother flying backwards, back into her seat. Instinctively, Mark grabbed the edge of the bassinet table and leaned protectively over the top of it. With nothing to hold the now awake infant down, the second drop sent him flying upwards and into Mark's chest. Mark grabbed him with his free arm and held him tightly to him as he too lifted off the floor. The baby screamed, and Mark clutched him harder as he fought to get his feet back on the ground. Landing back on the floor, his knees buckled, and he almost fell. Looking back on that day, he would always be sure that it was the small life in his hands that had given him the strength to stay upright. He eyed a spare seat behind him and dropped into it, fastening the seatbelt around them both as the turbulence pummeled the plane. The baby cried into Mark's chest, and his mother stretched across the aisles to take him. "Just a moment," he said calmly, now with both arms around her son. As soon as it was safe, he would hand him back to his mother, but not a moment before.
Maria checked her reflection in the washroom mirror as she reapplied her makeup and smoothed back her glossy hair. She had had a good rest in Hong Kong. With a teething baby back in Sydney, she was getting little sleep at home these days, and so, safe in the knowledge that her parents would take good care of her daughter, she had spent this trip recharging her batteries before she flew home. She clipped her makeup bag shut just as the plane lurched. Holding the door handle, she shot a look at her reflection and then, as the plane dropped, watched as she rose up into the air. The washroom ceiling cracked as her head crashed into it. Hitting the floor again, she wedged herself in between the toilet and the sink, rubbing the back of her neck with one hand while she held on with the other. From outside, she could hear screams, but she couldn't go out yet, not while the plane was still convulsing like this. And even then, she wasn't sure she'd be much help to anyone. Not while her neck hurt this badly.
Secure. Claire said to the purser as she came back into the galley. Cheers, love, he said as he latched the last of the carts. Let's get this girl on the ground and see what Sydney is all about. I'm so excited, Claire said. Neither of them had been before. The 8-day trip to Hong Kong and Sydney was usually the domain of the most senior crew, but for some reason this time there were a few of them who hadn't been before, and they were all dying to see the sights. So far, they had planned a day at Manly Beach, a walk through the botanical gardens, the opera house, and a night at a rooftop bar, perhaps even a club. With just some 30 hours there, they were on a mission not to waste a moment. The first drop came out of nowhere, and Claire reached out for the galley side to steady herself. She looked up for a handle to hold, but before she could find one, the second drop sent her flying into the air. She heard the thud as her head hit the ceiling. She thought she heard the purser call out her name as she slammed back down, her jaw connecting with the lip of the galley side and sending a searing pain down her whole right side. She landed heavily on the floor and sat there for a moment, dazed as the plane made her whole body bounce up and down on the hard floor. Again, she thought she could hear her name,
Claire,
but it was as if she wasn't quite there for that moment. Something warm was trickling on her arm, and someone was shaking her shoulder. She snapped back into reality to see the purser's face just inches away from hers. Claire, can you hear me? He was saying. Claire! She nodded, her head moving the tiniest fraction before the pain in her jaw made it stop. She was afraid to touch it, but she lifted her hand anyway, feeling the stickiness of blood on her fingers and numbness on her wet skin. The purser was up now, grabbing something from above them. Then he was back down next to her, tearing open the first aid kit. Claire, you've hurt your face, my love, he was saying, but her ears were ringing so loudly, his voice seemed so muffled. He pulled on some gloves and held out a dressing pad, putting it lightly under her chin. Then he took her hand and lifted it upwards. You need to put some pressure on here, Claire, he said, pushing her hand up. She blinked her understanding and pushed as hard as she could without the pain being unbearable. Glancing down, she could see that she was now covered in blood.
Rachel swallowed hard as she walked carefully down the aisle, making sure that she was holding onto a seat at all times. Is everyone okay? She asked, casting her eyes left and right. The man who had been on the floor looked up from his seat and nodded, trickles of sweat running down his face on either side.
I am now, he said with a snort.
Are you hurt? Rachel asked.
I think, by some miracle, I'm okay, he said, patting himself down. You need to get a plaster on that, though, he said, frowning at the bleeding cut on her arm.
She smiled, touched by his concern. I will, she assured him, and carried on down, every single passenger staring up at her as she passed through into the economy cabin. She knew they were looking for reassurance, like they always did when turbulence got bad. Usually, she would smile and tell them it was fine as she walked casually past, checking their belts were fastened. Nothing to worry about, she'd say. But not today. Today had even scared her. Thank God the seatbelt signs were on, she thought, imagining how much worse things could have been if they hadn't.
Stewardess!
Someone waved at her from the other side. Rachel squeezed herself across an empty row to reach her. A middle-aged lady sat with her arm around a man's shoulders. He was leaning forward with one hand over his face and the other on top of his head. She could hear the captain on the PA now, assuring them they were still planning to land in the next 10 minutes and that medical help would be waiting for them on arrival. Are you okay, sir? Rachel put her hand on his back. He nodded without uncovering his face. What happened? He didn't have his seatbelt on. Rachel followed the lady's eyes up to the ceiling, where a dent sat as testament to the force at which he'd hit it. Rachel thought quickly. There was very little she could do for him, though. Not in 10 minutes. Would you like to lie down? She asked, thinking that she could lay him across the empty row, raise his head and give him some oxygen quickly. Like it said to in her medical manual, but he looked at her now and gave her a small shake of his head.
I'll be okay, he said, his eyes narrowing with pain. I'd rather stay here.
Rachel took her pen out of her purse and wrote his seat number on the back of her hand. I'll make sure the paramedics come to see you as soon as we land, sir, she said, rubbing his back. It won't be long. Nothing could have prepared Rachel for the scene that met her in the aft galley. At first, she thought that it was blood that was flowing on the floor, until she realized that red wine was literally pouring out from the bars, their glass bottles smashed in their carts. On the jump seat, the purser attended to a crew member who had blood seeping through a dressing under her chin. Next to her sat another crew member who was holding her neck with both hands, her eyes scrunched together in pain. One of the boys stood running his hand under the cold tap, presumably burned. A tear caught at the back of her throat and she swallowed hard. How can I help? She asked. The purser looked over his shoulder. His hands were gloved, but the blue latex was stained dark red with blood.
Can you check on Jenny for me? He said, his voice strained. She's on the back row there.
He shot a look out into the cabin. In the back row, Rachel had found one of the crew members laid down and knew immediately that it was her that she'd seen in the aisle. She was staring at the ceiling, breathing quickly while tears ran down her face. She had her hand in the small of her back.
Hey, soothed Rachel. Let me try and help you.
She reached behind the seat and pulled out an oxygen bottle. We'll be on the ground soon, hon, she said, as she put the mask over her face and strapped her in with a seatbelt to get ready for landing. Soon couldn't come soon enough. The plane was eerily quiet as they landed into Sydney. At the gate, everyone remained seated as the paramedics boarded, and the flight manager, with a list of locations in her hand, led the way, leaving Rachel to man the door. She watched with a lump in her throat as almost half of her crew and one passenger, the man who had hurt his head, were taken off one by one to a nearby hospital. Six crew down, sighed Jane as the last one was wheeled off. Together they stood, shoulder to shoulder, and said goodbye to the rest of the passengers as they disembarked. Rachel tried her best to smile like she always did at this stage of the flight, but it felt weird and misplaced. And then there was something else niggling at her, a feeling that she couldn't quite put her finger on. In the hotel, those that had made it waited for their room keys. I don't think I can get a bed yet, said Rachel to the purser. Her mind felt so overloaded with everything that had happened. And that feeling she hadn't been able to place, she'd just worked out what it was. Rachel felt guilty. Guilty that she was stood there with nothing more than a cut on her arm while her colleagues had fared so much worse.
Me neither, he agreed with a slow shake of his head.
Right on cue, the captain appeared.
I think we could all do with a debrief, he said.
No one disagreed. In the hotel's health club an hour later, each of them retold their experiences as they sat in the sauna. Here, they were able to finally talk about how traumatic it had been for each of them, in the company of those that understood. Here, they didn't need to reassure anyone or fix a smile on their faces. Rachel was comforted to find that she wasn't alone with what they now recognized as survivor's guilt. That evening, they went for dinner together, and eventually, exhausted, said goodnight and went to their rooms hoping for sleep. The next day, Rachel woke up and knew immediately that something was wrong. Had she opened her eyes? Why couldn't she see? She held her hand up in front of her eyes, relieved to see it, but everything beyond it was just a blur. She remembered the flight and wondered if she'd forgotten hitting her head, perhaps. Trying to push down the panic that was rising in her chest, she reached out for her phone on the bedside table and dialed what she thought was the number zero to get help. It's shock, concluded the kind doctor who came to visit. He had done some checks and was quite sure that her eyesight would be back to normal soon enough.
I recommend you stay another night, he said, latching his medical bag closed.
The news was playing on the TV as he left the room.
One passenger and six crew were treated for injuries after severe turbulence landing into Sydney, said the newsreader. Make that seven crew, thought Rachel, closing her eyes and sinking back into the pillow. Make that seven. The flight left the next day for Sydney, operating with the bare minimum crew to be legal, leaving Rachel and some of her injured colleagues behind. As the doctor had promised, Rachel soon made a full recovery, and she chose to operate the flight the following day, although she was, by her own admittance, terrified of turbulence for a long time to come. For those of you listening, we hope we haven't scared you. Please rest assured that clear air turbulence is an extremely rare event. But one thing for you to take away is that not a single passenger who was wearing a seatbelt was injured on this flight. So, perhaps on your next flight, you might be more inclined to keep yours on too. The Red Eye Podcast is produced and narrated by me, Ali Murphy. These stories are based on true events, but certain details, characters, and timelines have been altered to protect the innocent. Visit our website, theredeyepod.com, to subscribe to our newsletter and to find out details on how you can contribute your story for us to turn into an episode. If you enjoyed listening to our stories, please like, subscribe, and review. Thank you. As I'm sure you're aware, every single story on the Red Eye Podcast is based on a true story. Some of these stories are my stories. Some of them are from people who have donated them. We would love to hear your story because the more I've been doing this podcast, I've realized everybody has one. And some of these stories have shaped people's lives. If you'd like to remain anonymous, we can do that. But we'd love to hear your story. Please email us at hello@theredeyepod.com.